Chapter 2 Starbound. Tristan needed that loot. The bard needed it like a fire needs air. And it was in the hands of the most pompous twiddler he'd ever known. Baron Campus Pickle strummed in front of him. Tristan's mouth watered. He'd never heard the like. The notes that came from that instrument sang golden, turning silver. They hung in the air as if visible. They reached into him, touching places so deep it hurt. The ache sweetened while it stung, each note calling up childhood meanderings by waters and meadows he had not seen in an age. Tristan blinked back tears from his green eyes as only these few notes threatened to undo him. Even this lordling's feeble strumming made him want to laugh and weep together. It wasn't the player that did this to him. It was the lute. People think being truthful is easy. Artists know better. We walk a harrowing path to find such truth, and Pickle is no artist. He shifted his lean, athletic frame, briefly longing for his plain woolen garb rather than the snug silk shirt and embroidered waistcoat, as the fabrics tightened, constricting his movement. He tugged his waistcoat and returned his attention to the instrument. This was not a proper lute. The Order of the Luthiers here in Bestua crafted under the watchful eye of the Conclave Cantors. Anything the Order made was pedestrian. They were nothing like this, haunting and luminous. The distinctive rosette inlay might have somehow caused the unique sound, Tristan mused. He pushed the shock of blonde braids that marked him as a Northman back from his face, leaning in to see it more clearly. 8 base sides, carved with flowers, colored with strange blue and delicate shell, repeated on the bowl and neck. The honeyed rosewood of this lute glowed in contrast to the black or dark brown of a proper guild lute. "So I think that ballad should have that refrain," the Baron said, his nasal voice making Tristan's teeth grind. "And you must recount the glory of my house." He waved at the surrounding room, encompassing the gilt-framed portraits of his ancestors on the walls. The music room held so many paintings and books it rivaled a gallery. And still, he did have an impressive collection. Not one, but 2 full-sized harps, a lyre, several flutes, tambours, even drums, viols, and normal lutes in different sizes rested, patient in their silence. But House Pickle, like most noble houses in Bestua, didn't so much love music as they valued their standing. The collection demonstrated the house's power without any such thing as crass performance. Marbled floors with thick finished rugs, complemented white-plastered walls, hung with expensive paintings in gilded frames. The musical instruments shone as diamonds in their expensive setting, to be admired, not played, entombed. Tristan nodded, pursing his lips and stroking his close-cropped beard. He picked a piece of lint from his green-embroidered velvet sleeve. "It's a lovely beginning, my lord. I'm certain you hardly need me to write the ballad." "Nonsense," the man gestured, his arm dripping lace. "A trifle, nothing more. But I dare say I'll enjoy being able to claim I penned this ballad with you." He paused, eyes brightening as he imagined it. "Of course that means I'll need the opus to be nothing short of perfect. It must be ready in time for my wedding." "Certainly," the bard said. Half a beat, and he remarked, nonchalant, "That lute sounds exquisite. I don't think I've ever heard its equal." "You like it?" Pickle flushed and leaned forward, lowering his voice. "It's rather special." His eyes darted from side to side, and he inhaled and opened his mouth to speak, then shut it, turning away and fussing with his tuning pegs instead. Was it made in Bestua? The question was pointed and obvious. He already knew the answer. While Tristan had been told of such stories in his nursery, he had never seen one. He supposed that they weren't real. It was shocking, discovering such a terrifying musical instrument. It's a family heirloom. The Baron's nasal baritone sounded both condescending and exasperated, as if this should have been obvious. We've had it for generations. But it's so valuable, we rarely show it in public. I felt that the import of this occasion merited a performance. He offered it to the musician. Would you like to play? The words hung, awkward. Then impossibly, Tristan was holding the lute. The perfect weight. It curled into his arms like a lover, and he caressed it with no small passion, hardly daring to touch the strings. He bent his head, and with a sharp intake of breath, he began to play. A ripple of melody leapt forth from his fingers, soft at first. These notes explored. There was no other word for it. They reflected his soul and intentions, a musical mirror. He was testing the sound, and they tested the air. They soared and then hung back, hesitant, as if waiting permission before dancing aloft. More confident now, Tristan swung into a traveling song that made his own legs restless. His joy in the sounds made the notes even brighter as they skipped and bounced, echoing with a mad beauty. Tristan could smell a forest and feel the wind on his face. The music conjured them. Birdsong trilled the counter melody and found its way to the strings. It was so pure that his hands wavered. He shook himself and let the music fade. If I keep playing, I may never stop, Tristan said. He looked closely at the lute, turning it over in wonder. The bowl held a marking, indented in the wood. His fingers found it. Stars. They were stars. The mark of the luthier that had crafted this. The lute is starbound. Starbound. The word fit, reflecting the ethereal tone, the pale, glowing inlays. He glanced at his host, questioning. Piggle's blue eyes held unshed tears, affected by the music, but he answered the unspoken query. The story goes that my ancestor, Hiram Piggle, was in the Battle of the Sundered Cities, when the Water Leapers stormed the Great Palace. He shuddered, as if remembering. He protected a magister from certain death, and then the magister gave him this lute. It's been in my family ever since. A great story, and a great honor to perform with it, Tristan said, handing the instrument back to him. I would give all I own for such a treasure. Well, you shall perform at the wedding, the Lord said, when you play the Song of Piggle. Honestly, it caused such a stir when I brought it out of our family vault. I had a cantor turn up the next day, full of imprecation and questions. The servants must have gone to him, or one of the watchers. He sniffed, affronted, and gestured to the gargoyle-shaped grotesque that guarded his elaborate stone mantle. The man was positively wretched. He even hinted that I gained it by nefarious means. Can you imagine? He made quite a spectacle. Piggle placed the lute on its stand and then turned back to Tristan to continue his complaint. You can't get one of these anymore. Only the order builds lutes now. Everyone knows that. Tristan frowned, thinking, but if the conclave thought you'd acquired it, it must be possible. Piggle waved the idea away. He asked me about all my whereabouts for the past decade, and I answered him, everyone. I'm a baron. The cantor couldn't prove any wrongdoing regardless. Only a hint of doubt colored his scorn as he continued. But I suppose he did imply there were other such loots. Tristan felt hope rise in his chest, followed by fear. He could not rest until he owned a loot like this, no matter the risk. The task of finding one might prove impossible. The very fact that such a thing existed, and that he was able to use it, unharmed, raised questions within him. These instruments can kill people or drive them mad. This loot could be used as a weapon with a true song. He knew it. If the conclave was searching for them, others could be found. I will find one, he determined. I will own a starbound lute. I don't want the magic, I just want to play it. The Baron changed the subject, eager to get back to his favorite topic. Now about the verses. Tristan sighed and shoved plans already forming in him away. There'd be time enough for plotting after he finished writing Pickle's song.
Stars and stones, man!
Roared Jerome from across the crowded dining hall.
Where have you been?
Tristan stifled a guilty grin as he approached the trestle table that held the remains of the noon meal. He still wore one of his velvet surcoats and a lace-edged undershirt. Of noble birth and already granted Master Bard status in his home country, Tristan was being groomed to receive the official Master status from the Bindery Bards as well. Until then, he performed many of the duties and attended journeyman's classes, occasionally teaching. He wasn't quite a journeyman, but he had never made his journey. The Bindery would not fully acknowledge him master until he did. On kept slaving morning till night. Pickle's ballad must be perfect, he mimicked, gesturing grandly to the heavens. But by the warrior stones, the tune is finished. It is as glorious as I can make it. What will be perfect is not being in the chorister rotation next week, Jerome grumbled. Master Standish has assigned me 3 more manuscripts to copy, and he expects them by Tuesday. He plucked the heel of a loaf from the table, shoved it at Tristan, and pulled him to his feet. Come on, we're late. Tristan choked the crust down, running after the journeyman bard. They navigated through the labyrinth of vaulted hallways and parquet staircases with the ease of long practice and arrived at the teaching arena just before the bell, sitting on the velvet cushioned benches provided. The arena was octagonal in shape, vaulted stone like most rooms in the bindery. Narrow tapestries punctuated by arched stained glass windows warmed the room.
We trade in melodies and myth, history, teaching, crafting, entertainment, and intrigue. These are the bard's calling, announced Master Player Sondheim Ter, his rich voice sounding from downstage right.
The tall, gray-haired master crossed the stage as he spoke, his midnight blue master's robe swishing across the polished wood in accompaniment to his words.
However, there is another type of music which can not only touch the heart, it can quite literally raise a storm. Today, you shall discover the difference between songs and the song. This class is one of the most important he will ever attend as journeyman.
You've heard about the Daewon, those music mages of old. Daewon sounds like divine, because when the song was whole, these mages held the power of gods, of life and death. They went mad when the evil worm fought the Storm King at Kethelbrennan, at the World Tree. Likely, you all know 100 ballads that tell that tale, how instead of healing, they killed. Since the War of the Worm, only those who make lifelong vows to serve the Conclave learn to touch and use the song. Magic.
Master Ter's blue eyes sparkled as he waved his hands, mock casting a spell. He paced across the front of the stage, warming to his topic.
Today we shall discuss the most secret mystery. How to avoid using the broken song. Even though you're a bard,
and therefore sidestep the madness that comes with it. To do that, you must know how to touch the song."
Excited murmuring broke out among the students. A hand shot up from the front row.
"Yes, Connor."
"We aren't Daywin. We don't have the inborn talent to use the song by merely singing, so why would we go mad?"
"Excellent question. But then do you think your fellow musicians who take their vows of celibacy, truth, and baldness..."
He tapped his thick head of hair, raising his bushy eyebrows and paused to let the inevitable laughter pass. "Do you think they are all Daywin?"
"Yet conclave acolytes and cantors use the song. They heal, they protect, and yes, they defend when necessary. All with the song. All without going mad, without being Daywin. How is that possible? Anyone?"
The hair on Tristan's arms stood on end. He'd both dreaded and anticipated this lesson. As a foreign student, he had already been instructed thoroughly in this subject. These lessons were taught to all young children in his homeland by the dwarves. He had quickly discovered that bindery teaching sometimes conflicted with what he had learned from his tutors in Pelagor. Disclosing the differences often did not end well. He decided to feign complete ignorance. His hand went up.
"They use special instruments?" "Tristan proposes an interesting solution."
Master Terre's deferent bow was only partially mocking.
"But no. The instruments you speak of are now as volatile as the Daywin themselves and are therefore forbidden. You may on occasion come across one such in the collection of a titled nobleman. Take care and do not, under any circumstances, play the thing."
Tristan blinked. Was Master Terre trying to warn him? He cleared his throat. "Could a crafter accidentally make one?" asked Tristan. He shifted in his seat, pushing away a shiver. The master player arched a brow and stared at Tristan as if he knew his thoughts. He stroked the gray whiskers that cascaded over the top of his loose linen shirt, then half knelt to answer. He looks like a magister himself, thought Tristan, not for the first time.
"No," he said, his voice low and pitched to reach only his seat. "We don't know how to make them. That knowledge was lost with the magisters when they disappeared during the war. They took their secrets with them. For the best."
He straightened, addressing the entire group.
"Now, how do you touch the song without a forbidden instrument or the cursed voice of a Daywin?"
Thornton Febwump, a third-year journeyman from Tred, shot his hand up. "Some ancient songs have the ability to activate within the range of certain plants."
"And why is that, Mr. Febwump?"
the master called out over his shoulder as he disappeared behind a curtain, returning with a tray full of blooms. Thornton's chest puffed out as he answered. "Those plants carry virtue given by the Sinte for our benefit and continued prosperity. Cantors use them during their services and as they go about their duties." Master Terre nodded and held up a flower for all to see. It chimed softly as he moved it.
"This is a tune bell," he said.
"It's not the only flower with a virtue to activate the song, but it is one of the more common. They are sanctioned, forbidden to be grown outside of a conclave chapter house."
"Why?"
Jerome lifted his meaty arm with a grunt and answered,
"To grow such is a threat against every citizen. Using the song can destroy both you and everyone around you."
Master Terre half bowed. "Indeed, Master Nile. Lest any of you not fully grasp the point of this lesson, allow me to demonstrate." Master Terre crushed the tune bell within his large hands and began to sing. The song oozed from his mouth like a wound, and the world around him melted with it. Tristan just saw madness.
Faisant, the fickle spirits that haunted all Daywin, flickered on every side. Like flames, they appeared and then vanished. Faces of all colors and ages, dressed in strange garb, screamed. They gasped. They cried. The world shifted, emptiness yawning beneath Tristan's feet, and the faces of his fellow students stretched into death masks with glowing eyes. No wonder the Daywin went mad, thought Tristan. They couldn't know what was real and what wasn't. I'm ready to run screaming after only a few moments. He steeled himself to stay in his seat, focusing on the song itself. The words sounded foreign. Tristan had no idea what they were. Around him, students murmured in surprise and fear. Some got out and ran out of the arena, hiding their eyes. The song stopped. Master Terror let the students catch their breaths before he spoke again. Now you have seen as the Daywin do. The song is dangerous. We guard our secrets and these plans for a reason. Over the next few weeks, we will study the rudimentary skills needed to protect your mind from the broken song. We'll study all the plants that can enhance an aural nexus and learn how to spot a song with the potential to harm. You'll learn to take every precaution possible to play music that is only that, music. One slip or accident could be your last.